You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and today I have the great pleasure of speaking to Steve and Rick, or is it Stephen? I don't know. No, it's Steve. It says Steve right there. Stuff I was reading about the play. Was Steven. I said, really? Does he call himself Steven? So Steven Rick Simone Friedland. And that's, yes, Steve. Wave hello, Steve.
Hey, that's Steve.
And that obviously is Rick. Correct. Well, so truth in advertising. At first, I should tell everybody, Steve and I are first cousins. We have, known each other forever, although we don't see each other a lot. And Steve and Rick are a married couple, and I don't know, you've been together forever and married for how long?
Well, we had a commitment ceremony in 1999. And then when it became legal in California, we got legally married in 2013.
In 2013. Yeah.
We met in 96.
Yes.
96. So, yeah. So,
that's our ages, the last
pretty
century.
Pretty damn close to forever.
Pretty damn close to forever.
Forever. Yeah.
But it seems like a blink of an eye, right? Right?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Well, but that's wink, wink, because you did what many people would think was impossible. And the occasion for this conversation. Is that Steve and Rick just returned from New York, where they acted in a play, which, well, I want to say it was written by Tennessee Williams and Simone Friedland. So why don't you say something about the play, and then we'll take off from there. And thank you both for being.
The play is based on, it's called Kind Stranger, a memory play, and it is adapted from Tennessee Williams' memoirs. Rick handed me the book about 6 months ago, and said, or 5 months ago, and said, this is a project he's wanted to do for a long time, and Rick can speak to sort of how he got the idea for it. But yeah, and so the play is adapted from his memoirs, and it covers he wrote the memoirs between 72 and 75, but it covers his whole life. He talks about his whole life and all of his plays and all of his sort of relationships and loves and losses and what sort of inspired him to do all of the plays. And what I sort of noticed as I was reading the memoir were what was going on in his life reflected what he was writing about. And so the play really sort of shows how his life was his plays and his plays were his life.
Mm.
And so I sort of took it from that sort of point of view. And also from the point of view, I always feel like when anybody's sort of writing their memoirs late in life, they're trying to get their affairs in order. They're trying to like state their life in a accurate way.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like he felt there were a lot of misconceptions about who he was and his life. And I felt like he was writing the memoir to set the record straight. And I also feel like he thought he didn't have a lot of time left. He was by then deep in his addiction. And I sort of think he had a fairly good idea that he didn't think he was going to be long for this life.
And was he correct? How long did he live?
Well, he passed away in 83. So he finished writing in 75. So, you know, give or take, he wasn't terribly off the mark.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's really sort of what the play is. And we distill his, you know, memoir into 75 minutes. And we, you know, there's a lot of behind the scenes stories about the play that are really funny. And he's got this really wicked sort of sense of humor that is kind of in the plays, but his plays tend to be a little bit more dramatic and dark. But the memoir is really funny. And that was really key to me to sort of want to bring out. And I think it taps into very much Rick's sense of humor just as a person. They both sort of come from the South. They sort of have that same sort of sensibility. And so that was what I sort of felt was just an asset to the project. Yeah. Who Tennessee Williams was, at least the character he presented in the book, really matched Rick's sort of patois, or however you want to call it.
And so you were the writer, adapter, director, and Rick, you were the actor, the solo actor, the only actor. It is a one-person play.
It is a one-person play, yeah. And the idea for the one-person play was something I've been kicking around for about 6 years, which was inspired by me wanting to do every role that Tennessee Williams ever wrote. And he's my favorite playwright, and people always tell you what roles you can't play. So I said, how can I play every role I wanted to play? So I came up with an idea of Tennessee Williams writing his plays, and then me getting up and acting out every scene that I wanted to act out. That was the original concept. So I was reading biographies to get material to create this piece, and I came across his autobiography called Memoirs. And that's what I handed to Steve.
So the title of the play is Kind Stranger, a memory play. But his title of his memoir is Memoir. So where'd the title Kind Stranger, where and why did the title Kind Stranger come from?
Well, I was trying to be kind of clever because it's Blanche DuBois' famous exit line in Streetcar that I've always depended on the kindness of strangers. And it's sort of, it's a theme throughout the memoir that he came across these kind strangers throughout his life. And he always felt that his friends, sort of a sad idea that he had about the people who knew him. And it's a theme that we explore throughout the one-man show.
And it was a lot catchier than the untitled Tennessee Williams show.
Yes, right, exactly. So I don't know if you've heard this before, but pictures I've seen of Tennessee Williams, not at the end of his life, but earlier, there's an amazing resemblance. I mean, it's not like you're not a doppelganger, but you could be a cousin or a brother. It's really something.
It is uncanny.
With the right angle and the right lighting, you go, huh?
Yeah.
So every now and then people say that it's uncanny. So
yeah, so it's not just me who was Miles like, wait a minute. Yeah. So you had this idea of playing those scenes. Mm-hmm. Steve, I can't mix that up, right?
Either or, it's fine.
Yeah. Right. When you were reading the memoir, did you already know that was the thought process that Rick was going through?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and because he'd been talking about the idea to me forever, and I kept going, that is a fantastic idea. I mean, I love it. The theatricality of it is in and of itself just tremendous. And I love theater that's actually real theater that makes you sort of, that isn't just like, you know, theater that's pretending to be a movie. So the idea of him becoming these roles, both, I mean, male and female roles, was something that I thought it was just a great idea from the very beginning. So as I was going through the memoir, it was always sort of in my idea, how are we going to do the plays? How are we going to transition to them? And so that was a bit tricky. But I think we found our path, and I think they transitioned very well. And I don't think the audience is ever doesn't understand what we're doing when we transition into the plays. But yeah, that was tricky, and it was awfully fun to do.
Well, and this, despite the fact that you have the same last name and have been together forever, and one of you is the director and one of you is being directed, and yeah, and despite that, it was a lot of fun to do.
It was a lot. Yeah. We get along incredibly well, and we also both, I think it really comes down to respect. We have a tremendous respect for each other's, just each other as people and our talents. Like, I genuinely respect him as an actor. I think he's really smart in the way he approaches material. And it makes my job a lot. And plus, which, like I said, the way the first read through we had of the very first draft of it, we sat at our kitchen table and he just read the script. And it was so along the lines of what I was sort of thinking the play could be that it just made my job as a director just incredibly easy. Mm-hmm. Because I could just let him sort of do his thing.
And did you ever feel like it was incestuous, that it was so close, that it was too close, that like, did you reach out for, you know, I need a second opinion or a third opinion? Or was it really the two of you always doing that?
Well, I think it's interesting because, no, you're not usually that close to a director. And so I couldn't get away with anything because he knows all my tricks. So I couldn't BS my way through anything. So in that way, I was held to account. So that was good.
But you know, it's so funny. We were insular. I can't say that we really reached out. We were creating this thing that we both really liked. And we were hell-bent on seeing that vision through. And I think that that's a really powerful thing because he checked me and I checked him. There were things in the script that he just said he did not, so let's just not do that. Let's not go there. And I would be like, okay, I respect that. Cause you have to feel comfortable as a performer performing all of it. And then there were things that he was doing. I'm like, well, let's be more specific here. Let's be more. So we both, it's a piece we both mutually crafted.
Mm-hmm.
And when we performed it in front of the audience for the first time, we were presenting our mutual vision, and luckily it went well.
Yes. And when you presented it to the art, well, so you did this, you performed this at the, I forget the, was it the Dream Up?
Yeah, the Dream Up Festival in the East Village at a Theater for the New City, it's called.
And had you performed it anyplace else before? Or was this really the first time you did it for an audience?
We did one run through for my acting class because I wanted to have at least one run where I had audience energy right before we went to New York. So that was our only sort of preview.
Yeah. Yeah.
That.
There's a way in which that's like, wait a minute.
It was a little risky, yeah. But we had no choice. I mean, the situation that we were in, we were doing this festival, and we had literally, I keep saying that the ink was still wet on the play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We showed the play to like maybe four people for feedback, and we got various comments back, and some of them we took and some of them we didn't. But again, like I said, we both have been doing this a very, very long time, mm-hmm. in a lot of different ways. And so you have to trust the creative process. And I'm sort of glad you brought this up because the creative process and the creative idea is such a tenuous thing. And it's so easy to destroy it in early stages by not even knowing that you're doing it. Just a comment that you might get that will stop you from doing this creation. And so I think in some ways, by keeping ourselves insular, we kept ourselves away from those kind of what we both call little murders. That someone doesn't even know what they're saying and how detrimental it can be to the creative process because it's such a scary time.
Yes. Yeah.
And yeah. So I was really glad that we do have this incredible trust with each other. And that's what got us through it.
Had you ever worked together on something like, well, I don't know. I don't even know what I mean by like this, but a project where one of you had one role, one of you had another role, not necessarily, I don't mean acting role, but one of you was doing one thing, one of you was doing another thing, and you interacted. Was this a first?
Well, no, actually, we've worked together in various capacities through our entire relationship, where he's worked for me, I've worked for him. And I think one of the things that we're good about is respecting the hierarchy of whatever situation we're in. So we've had to do that in television production. So, and Steve has directed me in plays before, and I respect him in his role as director, and he respects me in my role as actor. So we've been pretty good about that.
When we met, I was in film school at the time, and when we met, he was a producer doing main title design and effects work. He gave me my first job out of college. So in that sense, even though we were at the beginning of our relationship, he was my boss. And I had to take notes from him, and I had to respect what he had to say. Respecting the hierarchy of how things work on a movie set or a play or whatever is intrinsic to making the process work. And we both intrinsically understand that.
But is this the first time you've done something together that was just the two of you?
Yeah, I think it is, actually.
Yeah. Well, no, I guess just the two of us. We've done some short films together.
Yeah.
But this creation was the two of us created this thing.
Yeah.
And
it was particularly intense.
Yes, it was intense. But also we had to trust. You have to trust when you're creating something that your vision is going to speak to other people. Do you know what I mean? I think we talked about something that you think sometimes if something's interesting to you, it's going to be interesting to other people. It's sort of the same kind of idea. And to trust that process and trust that the thing that you think is going to reach people and touch people and move people, it's you don't know until
you don't know. Right, exactly.
Now we've done it. And the response was incredible. I was blown away by the response. They got it all. They got it all. All the stuff that we were trying to communicate, they got it.
Mm. I was looking for, I was like, because everything I was seeing was, was positive and appreciative and whatever. So I was looking for, well, did anybody say anything good? And I didn't find anything, but maybe it's out there, but did you get any? Like, now that you've done it, if you were to do it again, would you change something? Anything?
Well, we are looking now because of the response that we got in New York. And we live in Los Angeles, so everybody, all of our friends out here are like, when can I see it? I wish you would bring it here.
Yeah.
So we're working right now to bring it to LA to do a production here. And that's looking good. It's looking like we're going to be able to do something after the first of the year, sometime in
January. That's great.
Yeah. It's very exciting. And we were talking about this in the airport, actually. I was like, how much rehearsal do you want when we remount it? And do you think we should, are there any things, we want to rewrite, having seen the play up? And we both walked away going, no, I think the play, the text of the play works on a lot of different levels and better than we thought it was going to be, in all honesty. We sort of looked at these performances in New York as workshopping the production because we didn't know what we had. Seeing it up on its feet and seeing it and hearing how the audience is responding to it, we're in good shape script-wise.
Sure.
There are definitely more things that I think, because of time, that Rick definitely wants to sort of infuse more into the performance. And there's a couple ideas that I sort of have that we'll talk over. But there's only... So we'll do about 3 weeks of rehearsal to get us back into the Los Angeles production. But that's about what we're looking at.
But so say something about Well, like, well, because that sounds like changes, right? Like adding and whatever. Would you make it longer? Would you, sorry, Rick, would you make it shorter? So, because you're on stage 75 minutes nonstop. There's no intermission. You don't get the like.
The text is going to remain the same.
Right.
We're not changing the text.
If I want to be on stage shorter, I just talk faster. But the truth of the matter is, if you really think of it, if you sort of think of the creation as like a sculpture, right? And we create the shape of it. And then with more time, you can go in and carve more detail in certain areas of the sculpture. That's sort of where we're at with.
So talking, but talking to somebody who's, I am perhaps the one person who lived in Los Angeles who does not think of himself as an artist.
Oh, right. Okay. Right?
So, What does that look like? What is carving more into the sculpture look like if it's not different words and it means staging, or does it mean, what does it mean?
It's sort of like exploring moments within the story where you can go deeper emotionally about how that affects the character. So
manifest in emotional expression, but not in textual changes.
Correct. Sort of experiential from the point of view of Tennessee Williams, because I'm using my own instincts about a lot of how he experienced his life. And people are very complicated. So the way something hits you one day doesn't hit you exactly the same way the next day. And if you really put your attention on it, you might have a different point of view about certain things. So it's just it's exploration. And, you know,
it's nuance. I mean, it's the hardest thing to really communicate. It's nuance in the performance where you talk to each other about what do you think is going on here. Is there another avenue that we haven't really thought about? Also, we were so concerned with making the piece interesting and not boring an audience, you know, because that's always a possibility, that we may have rushed the performance a little bit. And I think now we could sort of take it out of fit and let it play a little, take moments where we can rest, where maybe we weren't.
Yeah.
In the other performance, and that will enable the audience to think a little bit more about what they heard.
Mm-hmm.
We always want to stay ahead of the audience, but I think we may have been a little too ahead of the audience, and that we can give it a little bit more breath. And that's the kind of stuff that we'd be working on.
Did you both know a great deal about Tennessee Williams' life prior to this endeavor?
I actually didn't. And even reading biographies, you're hearing other people's opinions of who he was. But in this case, I think we were getting the authentic Tennessee Williams that is not well known to everyone.
There were a ton of people who saw the show and went, I never knew that about him. And I found that interesting. I did know some of the basic framework of his life. But he's never been a character that has been talked about. I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, it's like you don't know a lot about him. You sort of have this picture of him later in life on all these talk shows where he's, you know, not his best self, shall we say. But even in the play that he comments on why he did that, which I think is really interesting, why he presents himself as her.
This is probably not a fair question, but that's okay. We're related. So, but if you were introducing him to people who didn't know him, what would feel important to say about him?
That is a great question.
Yeah. And we are. I mean, that's sort of what we're doing with the play in some ways.
Yeah. Right?
What do you think?
Long gaps are fine. I can cut them out.
No, I think I might, if I were introducing him to a friend of mine, I might say, this is my very talented writer friend, Tennessee. And if I were talking about him behind his back, not in front of him, I'm just saying, you know, he is brilliant. He is funny. He's emotional. And he's a rascal. So just be ready. I might say something like that.
Yeah.
He was kind of hell on wheels a bit.
How so? You mean in his personal life?
Yeah.
In his personal life, in his opinions, in the way he would challenge people with his opinions and his thoughts about life. And he had a very healthy sense of who he was. He didn't think he was right. He just knew who he was.
Right.
As a human being. So, which I love in a person.
I think the one thing we try to introduce more than anything is just how funny he was.
He's so funny.
Because you just wouldn't think of Tennessee Williams as being this funny guy. And he's really hilarious. His writing is really funny. And the more that I've sort of read his plays, there are some that are just outright comedies and that I never even realized. That in the is a comedy. It's hilarious. And it's not something that I think people normally gravitate to when you think of Tennessee Williams.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know we spoke about this when we spoke previously, but why now? Why Tennessee Williams and why now? I mean, I get the there. It's been on the back burner for 6 years, 7 years, 8 years. And so, like, you know, if it's not now, when?
We have a guest. Sorry.
Yeah. You know,
it happens.
Yeah.
That's a great question. Why now? Because we wanted to do the play now. I mean, that's the easiest answer. But really, what people have been sort of telling us, because we have no answer for that question.
I have an answer.
Oh, go ahead and answer it. There you go.
Well, listen, even though Tennessee Williams is my favorite playwright and I thought I knew who he was, I had no idea who he really was as an artist and as a man. I only knew him through his work and people's opinions of him and his work. But it's important that I think that people know that he is also a human being. That he struggled with doubt and loves and losses, just like all of us do. He's not some esoteric character. He's a human being who's trying to create something beautiful in the world. So that's important. I'm going to put this cat down.
Yeah, perfect.
And does that Kim come out in his memoir?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think, yes. He talks a lot about doubt for all of his plays. He questions if any of them were any good. And what he's also doing in the memoir is here's a playwright who has spent his entire life creating these characters in an artistic form. And now what he's trying to do is put his life in the same kind of form, to put it to an artistic form. And at the end of the memoir, he basically says, I don't know if I've achieved that. I'm going to have to leave that interpretation up to you, the audience, to see if my life is artistic. And in some ways, I think we're helping him do that. We are putting his life in an artistic form. But the other thing that Rick and I were not even, I don't think, conscious of doing at the time, but we don't treat him like a legendary playwright in the play. We treat him very much like a human being. And it's very much a slice of life and seeing him trying to write this memoir. That's what the play is basically about. And then he reminisces about his life, but we treat him as a human being. And what we adapted was the character that Tennessee Williams wrote in the memoir. Whether it's really Tennessee Williams or not, I can't say. We adapted the book and we adapted the character that's in the book. Why now? I think there's I feel like there's a renaissance with the guy's work. There's a lot more shows that are being done of his. Glass Menagerie is always one of the top 10 plays produced every single year.
Every year.
Every year. And it has been since it premiered in 1944. I don't know, you know, he says his most successful play is Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and that's just not true. It's Glass Menagerie. And so he's always relevant.
Yeah. There's one other element that's sort of, we're in a climate now where queer artists and queer stories are disappearing and people are trying to erase queer history from the zeitgeist. So it's important, I think.
I wonder why, right? Yeah.
So it's important to shine the light on people who came before us that told these stories and shared their life.
And he wasn't shy about that.
At all. No, at all. In all of his plays, even, let's say, even 1944 in Glass Menagerie, Tom is suspiciously gay. I mean, there is that interpretation, and it's never outwardly spoken about, but it's, and we also know that Glass Menagerie is autobiographical.
Yeah.
And was he, I mean, I know he had a long relationship with, is it Frank Merlo?
That's
Frank
it.
Frank Merlo.
the love I didn't know how to say his name. So, but were they open? I don't mean open like to other partners. I mean.
Yes, it was absolutely.
Nobody tried to hide anybody else.
He tried to hide it.
That's the one thing you have to admire about Tennessee Williams. He lived his life authentically out. He wasn't like a political activist. Excuse me. But he was an out person in his life.
And we explicitly state that in the play. I mean, he took Frankie with him to see Jack Warner on the Warner lot. He took him to every single party. Everyone knew that Frank and Tennessee were together.
Correct.
It was not, in that regard, he was, you know, you always say like, well, he wasn't a political person, but in 1948 or 1949, where these things weren't being discussed, he was living his life fully. And that in itself is a political statement.
That you is bet. Activism.
You bet.
Not there.
And do you know if he, like, did he ever get, you know, were there ever crowds outside the theater trying to shut him down? Because there's a gay guy who's...
even Streetcar, which talks explicitly of Blanche's husband being gay, that play won the Pulitzer and was the hugest play in 1948. I go back a little further.
And I think theater was one of the areas where you were allowed to tell those stories.
Yeah.
It had its place.
But right. He was doing it in every single one of his plays. In his life. On the Hutton Roof is all about homosexuality. I mean, it's Brick and Skipper. We all know what's going on between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And that Skipper kills himself because Brick can't say he loves him. Mm-hmm. And that's 1950. And you think like, oh, in theater, we always go back to Boys in the Band. That was the, you know, the pinnacle of or the turning point of gay theater. That's 1968. And I go, that's just simply not true. You had on Broadway, these plays. And he was openly writing about it at a time when it was, you know, homosexuality was being whispered.
However, when his plays were adapted into films, they tamped down those themes in the film.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, they couldn't get it past the board, I'm sure.
Right.
But you know what? You can't get around the plot. I mean, though he doesn't, it's not explicitly stated in the movie. Now you can watch it and go, oh, I know what was going on here.
Right.
But Streetcar is held up as a canon of one of the greatest films ever made.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And did you get a sense that the audience, was the fact that, that you two are a couple and Tennessee Williams was openly coupled. Did it bring in an audience that was inclined in that direction, or was it folks showed up?
It was an interesting cross-section because there are a lot of people that are interested in Tennessee Williams. That's what we discovered. And then in terms of it being sort of a gay play or that was the reason people came, I didn't get that sense. Did you?
Developing an audience for a new play is always difficult. We're still in the process of developing an audience for a new play.
What does that mean? Explain that to me. I don't know what that means.
To get people to come see your show is hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, that's the fact of the matter, you know? So in terms of who the play appeals to, I do believe it'll appeal to a very gay audience.
It does.
It's very hard to tap into that audience. We hope we will tap into it a little bit more better in LA when we have a little bit more time to cultivate that. In New York, it was, you know, it was harder for us. It was easier for us to get an older audience than it was for us to get a gayer audience.
Oh,
to be quite honest, you know, but the subject matter is it's a beautiful gay story. I mean, there is a really beautiful gay story in this piece. So I feel like the piece is universal. I don't think we're really tapping, because we are tapping into theater people who love Tennessee Williams. We are tapping into, you know, it is a gay piece. I mean, there's no way around it.
What does that mean?
And it's just funny.
What does that mean to the viewer? It's a gay piece.
It talks about a gay relationship.
Well, the Tennessee Williams is a gay man.
Right.
His life as an out gay man, and he's talking about his life, so
But that's not the, there's a question. It doesn't sound like that's the major intention of his memoir.
No.
Right? To put that out there and make a statement.
I will say that the talking about the love of his life and the loss of the love of his life was a major part of the memoir, because it was a major part of his life.
Right. Right.
So,
yeah.
And I think it's really important in the world to put out stories about interesting, flawed, beautiful people who happen to be gay. And that's what this is.
Right.
Right. I mean, I just was thinking, I was chuckling because it was like, how does one try to, there's probably an answer to this, but how does one try to build a gayer audience, like by reaching out to various outlets, gay publications?
You're absolutely right. To get my publicist to go, hey, you know, tap into that.
Yeah, do something. Well, yeah.
Right. You talk to other gay theaters. You try to get it. Like right now, we're in discussions with the Provincetown Tennessee Williams Festival, and they're interested in the project. And they're going.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I mean, there's that kind of avenue. It's funny because when we were getting successful, or we were getting some really nice notices in New York, I started reaching out to other theater festivals, blind. And I would send them an email to info@, we think like I'm never going to get a response. And then I would tell them what the play was about. And I'd say, I hope, you know, this gets, you know, put in front of the right person's eyes. And within a couple of hours, I got a response from the head of the festivals, the head of development at some huge festivals. So it's interesting that the subject matter and who he was is helping us break through some doors in terms of connections and trying to promote the play.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that we did premiere in New York and we did get good notices from New York critics helps a lot. Mm,
yeah.
So that I'm really thankful for the festival for including us and allowing us this opportunity to get those notices, to be honest. And now it's all about what we sort of, and we only did 6 performances in New York. So, I mean, like we're still at the very early stages of where this play is going to come or going to turn into or how we're going to get it out there. It's one of the reasons why we're talking to you today, to be, you know, completely honest.
Did you film the play?
Not yet.
No.
No.
And I mean, that was purposeful because first of all, we were in New York and all of our production assets are here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
There's that. And because we were so focused on the creation of this production, adding another level of that kind of production would just steal focus from what we were trying to create in this moment.
We had enough. It's,
The plate's full enough, right?
Considering opening night, we were like, here goes nothing.
That is literally like jumping out of the airplane.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Completely.
The stage manager says places, and I'm like, holy smoke.
We're really doing this thing.
Wait a minute. It's not supposed to happen like that.
And here we are in New York. Okay, sure.
I was just hoping I wasn't going to be dragged from the stage by the villagers with pitchforks. You're terrible. Get off the stage.
Can we? Well, I don't know. There may be more things to say about the play, but I'm curious about Is this the first piece of your working either together or apart where I don't know how to say it, where gayness is important? Or is it important?
No, yeah. We write what we know. We work on projects that we know, and sometimes that means it's a gay project, and sometimes it doesn't mean it. But we've not shied away from that.
Right.
And, I did a movie before I was even out to everybody. That was really gay. And maybe it was my coming out, bold statement without having to say it, but yeah. I did write the movie and it was fun, whatever. I don't think it's something that it's not necessarily something that we shy away from, and it's not necessarily something we only do.
Right. Understood.
I think it's important. I mean, it's interesting to look at, is gayness important in telling this story? And I think it is, because Tennessee Williams, we're stuck with Tennessee Williams and his life. And Tennessee Williams, in a way, is stuck with us in our life and our point of view and our experiences and our emotional journey through life. And we lend that to him. He lends us our story. Yeah. And between those two things, we create this new thing.
Yeah.
If we didn't have the relationship we have, if we didn't understand the depth of the meaning of that kind of relationship that he had with Frank Merlo, we wouldn't be able to tell the story. And it's a unique way that queer people move through the world. It's not like we're modeled in everything we've ever seen since we're born. So it's something that you learn along the way,
right?
How that works. So
well put.
Well put indeed. Dude, well, we can't ask him if he learned anything, but do you feel like you learned something more about either about your relationship or being gay in the world from putting on this play or developing the play?
Well, I think one of the things that I walk away from it after this part of the journey,
yeah,
is that how precious relationships are. I mean, we've been together a long time, and there are times
I think we established that it's forever.
Forever. Even though we look so impossibly young, how can you say that? It's not, I don't want to say that we take it for granted, but you have to stop and remember how lucky you are to have this thing and to celebrate those small, beautiful moments that you don't realize are so precious. And he lost his partner to cancer, and it was devastating. And it took that for him to see how much he loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's funny. Cause it's like cause I obviously watched the show more than Rick does. He's not even seen it yet.
Yeah.
But I've watched it a lot of times, and it's the one thing that always comes back to me is like, and it hits me hard. It's like, if I ever lost him, that thought absolutely crosses my mind as he's portraying this person. And it's the thought of it is devastating.
Yeah.
It's just really devastating. And that's also what we're tapping into for with Mr. Williams.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if anything, I think Rick is bringing more of his humanity to that. I mean, I think he as a person is really sensitive to that. And it's also why he performs, especially that session of a play, so incredibly beautifully. More beautiful than I ever even imagined.
Mm-hmm.
I was sort of putting it together. He throws his life into it. And it's, I got to tell you, it's something really, it's magnificent to watch.
Mm-hmm. So now that this has been so I get it that it's embryonic in a certain way, but so successful in its like, embryonic form.
Yeah.
I know you work together periodically on things, et cetera. You each have your own lives, but are you now, do you find yourself looking for more ways to work together in that sort of way? Perhaps not with you know, Rick having to be the only person for 75 minutes. But are you looking at, are you like, is that around?
I would work with him again, especially after this experience, in a heartbeat. I mean, because I just know whatever he'll bring himself to the role. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Am I actively seeking? I mean, you never know what your next project's going to be. You never know what's going to turn you on next. It took me 15 years for something to turn me on enough to do this. So it's hard. But yeah, I mean, the situation will come up again.
No, yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I can get another job.
No doubt.
There's more work to do on this piece. We have a lot of work that is possible with this piece. And then, yes, I would work together. I would love to continue to create stuff together. It is a blessing for us to be able to find a piece where we can use every bit of our abilities as artists and our production savvy to create something. This really ticked all the boxes. It took everything that we both know how to do it.
And but Rick has been recently shooting a bunch of, you know, short films, and I've been working on him as a producer or helping him edit it or coloring it and just doing sort of other stuff. And that's been joyous. I've loved doing that. So every time he says, oh, I got another script I kind of want to go shoot, I'm like, let's do it. You know what I mean? So we'll jump on those opportunities and we'll do it in different capacities all the time. We'll constantly change the hat. Mm. And I think it makes our relationship stronger, just because we're helping each other achieve what we're, you know, artistically what we're trying to do in our lives.
Yeah.
And our art, for sake, you know, lack of a better term, is both really intrinsically important to us. I mean, without being able to express this, I don't know what we would do. And, yeah, you know, a job is, you know, I'm an editor and whatever, but without these little side gigs, I mean, I think it really means everything. It really does. I don't know how else to put it than that.
It also gives us confidence and encouragement to believe that the things we want to create have value. So that's been huge.
Try
the next crazy idea that we come up
with. You know, something that was really interesting, once the play opened, we started going to friends of his or ours were doing readings of new plays in New York. And to go as like somebody who's sort of suddenly immersed in the New York theater scene, and people who have seen the show, who now respect what we did and were inviting us into this scene, it was really lovely.
Yeah.
To feel part of that New York sort of theater scene. It was just a part of the trip I didn't expect. Mm. And probably the part of the trip that I loved the most.
That's interesting. Yeah. You know, clubs are notoriously difficult to break into. Right.
Right.
And so to do it without trying to break in.
It was great. That's all I got to say. It was great to work, to see other people, other artists doing their thing and respecting what we did. Yeah. And it's just it's a sharing. And it was really special.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm looking at the time and I'm asking, what else is important to say about it? Other than, there's now no place for anybody to come see it.
Soon. We're working there. We're going to LA. We will do an LA production.
The graphic will come up on the screen. I promise you at this time.
We'll give you our artwork.
It will say kind stranger, a memory play, et cetera, et cetera. I'm really glad it went so well. I'm really glad to be speaking with you both again. So, not that we weren't speaking as a matter of, you know, And you never cut the sandwiches all the way through, motherfucker.
It's great to see you, man.
I told
my sister that we were doing this, and she was like, oh my God. So you got to come down and see the family.
Next time I'm there, which is likely towards middle end of October.
Oh, okay. Beautiful.
So, yeah.
Come on by, see the cats.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Steve makes a great ratatouille that you'll love.
Yeah. I do.
Okay.
It looks just like the movies.
So
that's great. Thanks for that.
Hey, thank you, both of you guys for doing this.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.